When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
PSA, Preller strikes again. Welcome to Nothing Personal. Today is Thursday. Hello, today is Thursday, March 14th, 2024. Preller strikes again. I wanted to go with Tangled Up in Brown, as in Dylan Cease. Chicago White Sox traded Dylan Cease 1 day, 2 days, maybe 3 days, after I said on this show that the White Sox would get the biggest possible return at the deadline. And I was surprised that Dylan Cease was going to be traded because there were rumors going on the last couple of days, thoughts of the Yankees going after him. The Yankees are making calls because Gerrit Cole is out. More on that later. Trying to figure out what they're going to do. And then out of nowhere, the Padres make a trade. Except it's not out of nowhere, because that's what AJ Preller does. That's what the Padres do. Let's review their offseason. Let's review their past 5 years, 10 years under Preller. Up, 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 failure down. Up, 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 failure down. God, that's a lot like the way I ran a team. It's the worst possible way to do it, unless you can get a ring. Then once you get a ring, trade on that the rest of your life, you're good to go. Preller doesn't have a ring. He's got nothing. Oh, he does have 12 shortstops starting in Korea on March 20th. So let's get back to this trade when I looked at it. And I'm not going to go somewhere else. You want an evaluation of Thorpe, the Yankees player from the Soto trade? Great. I'm happy to give you one. Steven Wilson, good relief pitcher. Fine. Not for here. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the fact that Dylan Cease is making $8 million in arbitration. He has 2 years of control. What that means is the Padres will have him for 2 years. They'll pay him $8 million this year. They'll pair him with Darvish, signed long-term. Musgrove, signed long-term. Bogarts, Machado. Hader. No, Hader got traded. Ah, that's okay. Waka, no. No, he's gone to Snell, Cy Young winner. What a great rotation. No, they lost him too. So the Padres had to cut payroll because they're not in compliance with the debt service rule. The Padres payroll is it close to 50 to 100 million lower? Somewhere in that range, way lower, as it should be. They're still losing money. But they decide to trade two of their top eight prospects. Three of their top eight prospects, plus a reliever and a 4-for-1. You know, I really wanted to conclude after I saw this that AJ Preller doesn't know what he's doing, because that would be on point. It would track for how I view it. Except this trade makes perfect sense. The reason why you have a strong farm system is that you need to either promote them. They will with Jackson Merrill, or trade them. That's it. And so the Padres fortify their starting rotation. They realize that they're thin on outfielders. They realize that they lost maybe their best offensive player in Juan Soto. But they did that because financially they had no choice. So what are you going to do? Put your head between your legs and kiss the season goodbye? Or do you make an attempt to get a pitcher who has a chance to be a middle of the rotation, maybe top of the rotation? Let me give you the quick scouting report on Dylan Cease, because everyone is jumping all over themselves to tell you how great he is because he finished second in the Cy Young 2 years ago. Dylan Cease is fine. He's not an ace. He's not even close to an ace. Does he have an ace slider? Yeah. But when you look at what he will be in the Padres rotation, a three behind Darvish and Musgrove, maybe. So what is the purpose of trading for someone like Dylan Cease and giving half of your top eight away? The reason is that we are taught that pitching and defense wins. And the Padres have been giving out huge position player contracts in Bogarts and Machado, etc. And they have not yet been able to figure out what is the combination needed to be successful on a continuing basis with the same core. They had a run, made it to the LCS, had a drug issue, had a payroll issue. And so now, are they retooling? Are they all in? Are they going for it? All over the internet today on talk shows, you're going to hear people grading the trade. You're going to hear people wondering whether or not it makes sense what the Padres did, whether or not this is an indication of them being all in. This is a pure baseball trade. When you have a chance to add rotation depth, do it. If Cease ends up being top of the rotation, great. If he ends up being a fifth starter, you may non-tender him. Is it a guarantee that all of the prospects will make it? I know better than all. When you trade for top prospects, they don't all make it. They're not all superstars. There will be a new top eight in the Padres farm system. And that's the end of it. But what about the White Sox? The White Sox, people will say, have the, I don't know, bottom third farm system. Now they bring in, they fortify their farm system, and they trade Dylan Cease at the height while saving $8 million that they can put toward trying to get $2 billion of public money for a new stadium in the South Loop. I used to think there was a correlation between how good your team is and the chance of getting a new stadium. Jerry Reinsdorf knows better. You don't need a good team to get a new stadium. The White Sox are still going to lose 100 games. First-year GM Chris Getz is trying to figure out how much patience Reinsdorf would have, knowing that even with Dylan Cease, they're a losing team. So you sit with your baseball guys trying to figure out, what do we do? When do we strike? And here's where the injuries come into play. And the reason injuries come into play is that when you're trying to maximize your assets, you do have to look at outside indicators that change the equation of when your asset can be maximized. So one of the outside indicators right now is that Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery are unsigned. That's two starting pitchers unsigned, and there's multiple teams looking for starting pitchers. Another indicator, a bunch of starting pitchers are injured, the latest being Gerrit Cole. Except that's the same as every season. Recency bias will tell you, and you may read elsewhere, that there are way more starting pitchers injured. There's an injury flu. There's a major problem with the way our pitchers are being prepped, with what's happening with them since they hit puberty. And it's all leading to these injuries. And I tell you that injuries to pitchers happen because no matter what era you're in, throwing 100 doesn't work for the human arm. Whipping off sliders, continuing to throw spin time after time. It's not natural, doesn't work, leads to injuries. Forget the fractured back that Devin Williams has in Milwaukee, out 3 months. They're despondent beyond repair, my friends in Milwaukee. Injuries happen to arms, shoulders, backs, hamstrings, feet, toes. Having players healthy is the most difficult thing. It's harder than evaluating players. So the White Sox think to themselves, maybe now I can get the best trade possible because of all these teams who have injuries. Except the trade that they did is with a team that didn't have an injury. It's with a team that was not desperate to overpay. Yankees, desperate, not willing to overpay. We've learned that about Brian Cashman. Chris Young, reigning World Series champion. Desperate? Maybe. Very unlikely to overpay. When do owners tell GMs to overpay? When they can smell October. Nobody is smelling October right now. Owners don't know whether they'll be this year's Diamondbacks or this year's Mets or this year's Padres or this year's Yankees or this year's Rangers. They don't know because the season hasn't started. So when the White Sox are evaluating getting calls from Brian Cashman and Chris Young and then AJ Preller, they took the best deal today, but make no mistake, that's not the best deal for Dylan Cease, or better said, it's not the best deal for a performing, controllable starting pitcher. So what happens if Dylan Cease has a bad year again? He had a great year in 22, a mediocre year in 23. You can read and study his peripheral numbers. There's plenty of places online to get that. So the risk is he has another bad start to 2024. Therefore, his trade value would go down from what it is when GMs can say to their owners today, hey, we're going to trade for the Dylan Cease of 22, not for the Dylan Cease of 23. The problem is, in real life inside front offices, if Dylan Cease has a 4-plus ERA through the All-Star break this year, there are still GMs who would say to owners, listen, this guy has 22 in him, not 23 in the first 15 starts of 24. That's not enough. We believe he's got the 22. So let's get him, because adding him to where we are, I can smell October. The only scenario under which the White Sox would not have done better for Dylan Cease at the deadline is if Dylan Cease gets hurt. So if Dylan Cease is already hurt, not that the Padres would care because they've got 17 different medical records per player. They don't care about trading for injured players, trading new injured players. Doesn't much matter. But let's just pretend Dylan Cease has been in the training room all spring. Hasn't pitched once all spring. Not ready to start the season. That may be an issue. That's not the case. Dylan Cease is ready to go. He's on a plane right now. I can't say right now. I don't know when you're listening to this, unless you're live at 8 a.m. on the Nothing Personal with David Sampson YouTube channel. You may know that Dylan Cease is on his way to Seoul or to the airport or sleeping on his way to go to Seoul. The Padres are on the plane right now. It was interesting. Preller made the deal 1 hour before flying to Seoul, South Korea. I wonder whether he called. He must have seriously called Brian Cashman right before. It would have made sense. Hey, Brian, this is what you do when you have a deal in place. When you have a letter of intent, an LOI, you send it over to the White Sox. You have a trade. We'll take Cease for these four guys. Before you sign it, you always say, A, pending ownership approval. What pending ownership approval means in a trade is not pending ownership approval, because you've already spoken to your owner. It means pending 29 more calls. So the White Sox, I would hope, called up the Yankees. Hey, Brian, we got a deal. We're ready to go here. You're going to lose them. Here's what we need. Are you doing it? Well, can we negotiate? Nope. No more negotiating. When you have an LOI in place with another team, you don't negotiate with any other teams. You call them and say, here is the deal that I will do with you that is better than the deal I have. The Yankees, of course, the assumption was that they were desperately going to trade for Cease because Gerrit Cole, first reported by John Heyman, I wonder where he got that, is going to be out in theory 1 to 2 months. I don't believe that for a second. As a matter of fact, I had to wait to see. I don't remember when it was, Coca, that Cole will be out until at least May 1st. We had that recently, and obviously we got that wait to see right. We will revisit that. It was back on March 12th. I can't, Coca. That's too funny. 2 days, though, we had to wait to see that Gerrit Cole will be out until at least May 1st, and today we tell you that we're right. Because he will be out till at least May 1st. And guess what? He's in LA. And the reason why Gerrit Cole is in LA, having schlepped there all the way from Tampa, is that he's going to see Dr. Neil Eletrosh. And the reason he's got to go see the doctor, and the reason why you still haven't had a public disclosure of his MRI results, which were Monday, today's Thursday, is that in theory, people looked at the scans, looked at the MRI, They told Cole what it is. Rumors are it's not a tear, but it's a strain. It's a flexor. It's a elixir. It's an anal, whatever the case may be. And then he got the second, third, fourth, fifth opinion. But then Boone said, you know, he's got a lot of people to speak to. He's got to speak to his family, his agent, his doctors. When you have an injury like a strained hamstring, or you've got some inflammation in your shoulder, there's not a lot of talks that go on with your family. When you've got an injury that requires surgery, that requires rehab, that may have you out for the year, you may want to talk to your family where you're going to do the rehab, where you're going to do the surgery. What do we do with our kids? Are we going to stay in New York? Are we going to move to another place? What are we going to do? It is very rare that there is family consultation for a minor injury. I am not wishing a major injury on Gerrit Cole. I do, however, believe that it is a major injury. Aaron Boone has told us there is no timetable for how long he'll be sidelined. The problem with that is we always have a timetable. And the reason we always have a timetable is because with every option that we give a player who is injured, there is a timetable associated with it. So Gerrit Cole could go the Tanaka route, try for a little injection, maybe a little PRP, and see if he can pitch through it and maybe miss 2 months, try to build up, come back, and see what happens. My problem is I hate when players delay. Hate's a strong word. Sorry, Alfie. Hate is a strong word. I don't agree with players who want to try to work through something, because really what we're doing is risking missing more time. If he needs Tommy John, or as Shohei Ohtani calls it, I have no idea what just happened to my arm, or as Lucas Giolito calls it, some sort of brace procedure, I don't care what you call it. When you have ligament tears, and it doesn't mean fully detached, any ligament issue with your elbow, you are missing a season. Could it be 9 months? Yes. Could it be 12 months? Yes. Could it be 18 months? Yes. If I'm the Yankees, I want Gerrit Cole to get it done right now on the hope that it can be 12 months and he's back pitching. Because all of the excitement of Gerrit Cole's contract, all of the people lauding the Yankees for signing the 9-year, what was it, Coca? 9 years, $324 million. He signed it in 2020. He's had a fantastic 4 years. But $300 million over four does not exactly work. It was a 9-year, 324. What did I say, 12? I meant to say nine. Do you want to redo that? All right, 4869. People talking about Gerrit Cole saying he had a great contract, and this is an example like a Verlander or a Scherzer where a long-term deal works. How do you say that when he has 5 years left of a 9-year deal? If Gerrit Cole and his one Cy Young and zero World Series and four top five, whatever he has, Cy Young finishes, if he doesn't pitch again for the Yankees, it's one of the worst long-term deals of all time. He's got 24, 25, 26, 27, 28. Coca, he doesn't have four more years. He has five more years. I think he's only pitched 0, 1, 2, 3. He's pitched four of the 9 years. Not counting this year. I am counting this year, Matt, because the year hasn't started and now he's getting paid all this money. The interesting part about the contract that the Yankees signed with Gerrit Cole that people may not be realizing is Gerrit Cole has an opt-out after this year. Guess what? Gerrit Cole shan't be opting out because he's not exactly a youngin', and his ability to beat what he has coming off an injury is non-existent. So I hope that Gerrit Cole doesn't miss much time. It's better for baseball when he pitches. It's better for when the Yankees are good. It's better when the Yankees are in October. I'm not rooting against the Yankees. I want G to get a ring. All of these things are true. But realistically, Gerrit Cole, lucky if he's back by the All-Star break. It's actually more likely he's out for the year than he's back before the All-Star break. But either way, when you lose a year, that becomes an 8-year, $324 million deal, which changes the entire math. That's basically $40 million a year for 8 years. And to be a $40 million pitcher, Scherzer, Verlander, Wheeler, Wheeler just signed that deal. He better still be good. Dave Dombrowski said he would. Scherzer and Verlander hurt. Hard to believe that they're $43 million pitchers because they're not. Their names are, their past performances, their resume is, their trip to Cooperstown all but guaranteed, but it doesn't mean that it's a good contract. So I would only ask that when you are talking about Gerrit Cole and when you're thinking about his injury, that you at least ponder the possibility of agreeing with me that evaluating his long-term deal at this moment may be slightly premature. We'll see what the Yankees do, but boy, do they have a problem. All right, Coca, speaking of Dr. Neil Eletrage, play me some music, please.
You know what I want? I want to talk to Samson.
So you want to talk to Samson. That's from the movie Half-Baked. And if you are 68, 69 baked right now, you will appreciate that you can get on my Twitter, David P. Samson, or go to davidsamsonpodcast.com. We've sold more than I thought of the diamond logo, the horse hockey. I think we may have an Oscar shirt available. We're going to have interesting announcements about some things, and I don't mean the 4869 shirt, but there are announcements forthcoming. Wouldn't it be amazing if by chance nothing personal would go on the road and do live shows in front of you, find a place to host a live show in your city? That would be cool. I can't even imagine that would happen. Get on the website, davidsamsonpodcast.com. Ask me a question. Maybe it'll make the show. Hey, Davey. There's only one person who's ever called me Davey. Now two, I guess, because you're number two. Hey, Davey, love the show, longtime listener. What about Nothing Personal with David Samson YouTube channel? Go there, hit subscribe, would you? You can see the outfit. As you know, the Dodgers team physician is Dr. Neil Eletrage. I do know that. You don't need to say as you know when you're talking or when you're writing. I don't mean to criticize the question. It's not necessary. Because if you think I know, or whatever. How does it work when he looks at other teams' players? Do the Dodgers need to grant permission? Do other teams have to pay the Dodgers? No. Or does he have his own private practice? Yes. I know the Dodgers have had a great run of excellent team doctors going back to Dr. Frank Job. I think it's horse hockey that he helps other teams. And then, do free agents ever consider team doctors and training staff prior to signing? Well, thank you for reaching out. Let me go to the last question first, and let me be as brief as a jockey. Free agents do not give a flying rat's pituitary gland who your team doctor is. They don't care about your minor league system. They don't care about your facilities. Did you see Chris Jones yesterday, Coca? Or today, Chris Jones signed by the Kansas City Chiefs. Remember, Lamar Hunt got the F-plus as a team owner. Chris Jones said, no, my owner's an A-plus owner, because Chris Jones got a ton of guaranteed money from the owner. Players do not care about these things. They care about the guaranteed years, the length of contract, the average annual value. They want to get paid, and God bless them, I don't mind. It doesn't mean we have to agree to pay him. Every bad contract is a president's fault. Everyone. Don't blame the agent or the player. But they don't care about the team doctors or the training staff. Because if you don't like your training staff, it's annoying because you have to see them all the time. But these players have side chiros, side trainers, side nutritionists, side beef. They have side everything. I mean, they have things that they do that are outside of the team building. So it doesn't matter. Now, you asked a question about, do other teams pay the Dodgers? No. So here's how this works. There are doctors who are extremely popular for different things. There's a doctor in New York that's really good with hands and wrists, and teams from all over the league send their send their players to him. Then you've got doctors who are good on Tommy John's. Eletrage is one. When we sent our doctor, we pay, but not the Dodgers. He's got an entire practice. Do you think that doctors make a living doing surgeries on baseball players? No. They make a living doing surgeries on you, on wheelchair. That's funny. I don't mean that. Armchair. Is it armchair athletes? Couch potatoes? What's the word when people think they're really good and they go to the church on Sunday on time and they play basketball 3-on-3 full court or 5-on-5 full court, 3-on-3 half court, and they tear their hamstring because they're old, or they play in softball leagues or hardball leagues and all of a sudden they're trying to stretch a single to a double and they get carted off because their Achilles is about 30 yards behind? Whatever those type of athletes are, like me playing pickleball, diving for a ball, falling on my hand and breaking my whatever part of the palm is. We then go to doctors because, hey, you're the team doctor for a professional team. I want to see you. What's the price? Holy cow, you don't take insurance? These doctors make their living because they're associated with teams. Often they pay teams to be associated with teams because people like you want to go use them. So other teams don't pay the Dodgers. Other teams do pay the doctor. It is a private practice. You know, there's no difference. Doctors are good. I just want to finish this last bit, Coca, if you don't mind. And then I'll go to the break, I promise, because I can't wait to review Gladiator. But when there is a team doctor for the Marlins and they're seeing a different player, they treat that player. These doctors are all professional. They're all really good. It doesn't matter. It's not like I've ever gone, this would be awesome. I never even thought of this. Go to Dr. Lee Kaplan and say, hey, you're going to see a member of the Phillies. Could you do me a favor? And while you're in there taking care of his knee, could you maybe break his hamstring? I mean, of course we don't do that. As competitive as we are, I didn't even think of it back then. It's funny, I'm thinking of it now, but no, it would never happen. And doctors, they're amazing people. They treat every player the same, no matter what team. And when you hire a team physician, you're hiring that physician because they're local, they're good, they're responsive, but you know that they're going to see other players. As a matter of fact, when they're every home game, your team doctor is responsible for the other team's health and safety. Teams don't travel with a team doctor. You use the home team's doctor. So whenever you see something happen on the field, often the visiting trainer will go out, but then it's the home team doctor who may go on the field or certainly goes to the visiting team locker room, clubhouse, and checks out the player. So there is no competitive issue whatsoever. I totally promise you. I appreciate the question. My name is Davey Jones. All right, when we come back, we are going to review Gladiator because it's Thursday. It's in my top 100. And then did you think we'd get through an entire show and not talk about Aaron Rodgers and the fallout that's already happened since he was rumored to be a VP candidate? I can't even say it with a straight face. I want to try to deliver that Coca very seriously because politics is serious. Presidential politics is the most serious thing we have. Here we go. 269. After the break, we'll be reviewing Gladiator, and then we're going to discuss a potential vice presidential candidate and his first view of what it's like to be in politics. We'll be right back.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The reason I'm laughing, welcome back. Thank you for downloading and listening. I am so appreciative of your loyalty. We're testing that loyalty, maybe. I'm getting a little antsy here in New York, testing it. Maybe take this show on the road. I love watching a movie every day. Coca, I've been pretty good. Two of the last four mornings, I actually stayed in bed until 6 a.m., but not last night. Last night I was in the theater at about 3:11 a.m. I started watching Argylle. And then I did work after that, getting ready for the show and thinking about things. And I was thinking about how to review Gladiator, which I don't know what number it is in my top 100. I'm going to say it's in the 30s somewhere. It's a movie I think about all the time, not because Coke has a tattoo of it. It's a movie I think about because Russell Crowe, it's number 38. Thank you, Matt. That movie is a brilliant piece of directing, Ridley. Acting, Joaquin, Connie, Russell. What's interesting is that way back in those times, people paid to watch people kill each other. And now it's called MMA. Without a tiger. Unless you're in Mike Tyson's living room and you're an actor. But the real point of Gladiator, and I watched it again this past week. What a story about siblings and love. I always took it to be the first many times I've seen it. I just saw it differently. It hit me differently this week. The relationship between Connie Nielsen and Joaquin Phoenix. The bizarre relationship. The relationship Russell Crowe with his wife. And what his wife, who is dead and gets killed. Spoiler alert, you can't spoil Gladiator, it's 24 years old. It's actually more of a family movie than a fighting gladiator movie. It's actually more sentimental than I remember. It's more loving than I remember, even though it's about people held prisoner to fight to the death. If you haven't seen it because you're young, watch it. If you've seen it because you're old, watch it again. It's called Gladiator. It won some Oscars. All right, here we go. Bring it on camera, would you please? We've got a random number generator. We're reviewing all 100 of my top 100 movies. Coca, I watched The Family Man again on Oscar Sunday, and I'm going to have to move that into my top 100, I believe. But I'm going to leave the top 100 alone right now until we get through top 100. And we have this great spreadsheet done by, was it Eric? And hit a button to see what we're reviewing next year. Here he goes. He's hitting it. I can't believe, what are the odds of that? Number 99 is a movie called Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. Guess who just presented at the Oscars? Sam Rockwell. Guess who's in Argylle that I was watching only 5 hours ago? Sam Rockwell. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. Directed by George Clooney, stars Sam Rockwell. I'm so excited to watch that movie again. How is that only number 99 on my top 100? All right. Dear Aaron, let me lay out better. I am quite excited to watch Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. How it's only 99 is beyond me. Dear Aaron Rodgers, I would like to give you a dime's worth of free advice. Now, I grant that you don't listen to anybody. I grant that you have potential issues that make me laugh. I love that you get paid. I love that you go on the McAfee show. I love that you do ayahuasca one day, Coca. Ayahuasca one day. I love that you brought a Super Bowl to Green Bay. I love that you played four downs for the Jets and then got hurt and tried to come back. I do not agree with many of your points of view, but I love that you have the right to express them. I love the fact that you are in Costa Rica, reportedly, doing one of your retreats when word came out that you were a VP candidate for RFK Jr. I can't even say it with a straight face. I'm trying. But here's the thing about politics and about quarterbacking. Here's the thing about being in Washington, D.C. as a VP, a heartbeat away from the president, or being the head of your team. Sports, don't strike me dead here. I'm looking up at lightning. I don't see it. Sports is entertainment. We're here to entertain you. That's all I did for 18 years. Try to find a way. Try to find a way to tug at your emotional strings and make you care, make you angry when we lose, make you happy when we win, make you hate me, make you love me, but just no apathy. But it's sports. It's movies. It's entertainment. When people are focused on their real life, which is all the hours of the day that they're not sleeping or watching movies, they don't much care that there was a bad game or your team stinks or that there was a bad performance. They're focused on their wallets. They're focused on their health. They're focused on their safety. They're focused on their retirement. They're focused on their next house payment. They're focused on their next meal. They are focused on real problems. So when you are running for president or governor, or you're on the presidential ticket, or you're running for Senate, Steve Garvey, or you're running for House, people are going to take a look at who you are and judge you differently than just as a quarterback. Because as a quarterback, at the end of the day, we really don't care how crazy you are. We really don't care how irrational you are. We really don't care if you have got true brain deficiencies or true belief in certain conspiracy theories, like Sandy Hook. Because you're a quarterback. But if you're going to be potentially in the White House, and you're going to potentially have something to say about those issues that actually matter, our level of scrutiny is going to change just a tad bit. Aaron Rodgers figured this out day one. CNN came out with a report that Rodgers has had private conversations, shared stories, including with Pamela Brown, one of the journalists who wrote a piece for CNN, that he actually believed Sandy Hook Elementary School either didn't happen, was a government inside job. All of the insanity and idiocy. It's funny when Nick Gordon says the moon isn't real. It's funny not being a racist or being an anti-Semite. That's not funny no matter who does that. But the conspiracy theories about certain things can certainly be funny. But Sandy Hook, mass murder, that's not one of them. But as a quarterback, when you say stuff, as an athlete, when you say stuff, people look past it. They roll their eyes and just say, you're a putz. But when you're up on a debate stage or you're on a ticket, it has a different meaning. I wonder whether Aaron Rodgers is aware of all the things he said to all the people he said them to, all the skeletons that he hid all those times in the mansion in Green Bay, all the skeletons of the way he is, the way he thinks, the things he says, the theories that he proffers, the way he makes fun of the mainstream, fine, no problem. As a quarterback, be very careful as a politician. Can you imagine Aaron Rodgers on a debate stage? Can you imagine how quickly we're going to get to the bottom of Aaron Rodgers, the VP candidate, and all of his family issues that we ignore as a quarterback? Hey, he doesn't get along with his family. Big whoop. All right, let's figure out who they are, why it is, what happened. Now, I want to get into something else. I want to get into the merits of that. And I want to get into whether or not that's how it should be. The scrutiny that politicians face, suspending presidential campaigns because of an affair, leaving office because of perceived harassment or actual harassment, which is worthy of office leaving. Do we hold politicians up to a higher standard? And the reason why we do and why we say it's okay to is that if we can't trust a politician to not be loyal to his spouse or her spouse or their spouse, then how can we trust a politician to be loyal to us as constituents, as citizens of the United States? Does that follow in your head? How many presidents and presidential candidates? I guess you can't be a candidate and be a womanizer, but you can be a president to be a womanizer, and it's all okay. And I'm not defending Trump. I'm not defending Clinton. I'm not defending Kennedy. I'm not opining on the morality of what anybody does. I like to say live and let live. But when it starts impacting the quality of candidates who are willing to allow their skeletons to be looked at, that's when I start caring even more. My issue is that if there are people who are actually qualified to be in government, who are not willing to run because the skeletons they have are personal skeletons, they like women, they like men, they like multiple women, they like a combination of women and men, they like people who are both women and men, they like being married, they don't like being married, they like being gay and married, they like having many kids, they like having no kids. How is that impactful? Because it goes against what you believe as a Christian, as a Jew, as a Catholic, as a Buddhist. I'm not buying it. When you've got conspiracy theories about Sandy Hook, when you've got political platforms that go against what people want, then don't elect the person. But to stop a candidate from running because they have a bad family history, because they've got different views than you have, because they may have conspiracy theories, I don't want that to happen. I want people just not to vote for him. So should Aaron Rodgers not be a VP candidate because of his views of Sandy Hook or because of the things in his family? No, he shouldn't be a VP candidate because he's not smart enough to be one. Now, you could throw Dan Quayle in my face, you'd be right. You could throw Sarah Palin in my face, you'd be right. You could throw plenty of people in my face on both sides of the aisle, and I would say, you'd be right. But because they've got a different view than I have, that doesn't make you right. So what can we learn from the Aaron Rodgers situation? A, he's got to realize if he's serious about this, what it means for his sports career, what it means for his personal life, what it means for people really digging deep into those skeletons, and then he just has to make a decision. But by definition, being a quarterback or being different than I, that is not a disqualifying point. And people today are making that mistake. They're saying because he has this view of Sandy Hook, therefore he cannot be a candidate. I would prefer people to say, because he has this view of Sandy Hook, he cannot be a winning candidate. It's the same thing with RFK Jr., in my opinion. Maybe. Yes. We'll see what happens. But the level of scrutiny for Aaron Rodgers, holy cow. That's a full Karen Carpenter situation. We've only just begun. He's not really going to be on the ticket. Do people really think that? Someone said, I read someone yesterday, Matt. Hey, what's he going to do? Maybe that was me. Did I read myself? What's he going to do if he's got his playbook and then he's got to do a debate or then he's got to do inauguration? Is he going to skip it? Is he going to play for the Jets, not play for the Jets? Here's a little note. There are people who run for office who have other jobs. It's true. They do. Now, it takes a lot of time to run. You got to be on the campaign trail. I believe you cannot be a professional football player and be on the campaign trail, especially in an election year. Is it impossible? No. Would Woody Johnson allow him to do it? Probably not. Is it a violation of his guaranteed contract? You bet your bippy. Nothing. Personal pick of the day. The Heat frustrate me. I had the Heat +4.5 versus the Nuggets. Jokic. Did he only have like 8 or 10 points and the Nuggets still won by 12? Have you noticed NBA? Is NBA scoring down? Final score 1-800-Flowers. Not yet sponsoring, nothing personal. It was 100-88. So we lost. We're back to 33-35. Big game tonight. We got the Milwaukee Bucks, Doc Rivers and the Bucks against not Joel Embiid and the Sixers. Bucks are given 8.5, and we are laying the points. We are not fans of the Sixers without Joel. God knows who's not going to play for him every day. It's someone different. The Bucks are in a dogfight trying to show Doc Rivers that they are worthy of potentially being a number two seed. Of course, they're not going to catch Boston, but we are going to take the Bucks 8.5 versus the Sixers. Well, who did they? Yeah, they just lost by 35 on Tuesday. Who are they playing? They were playing the Sacramento Kings, I believe, and they lost by 30. It's unreal, some of these games. Yeah, we got the Bucks 8.5. All right, you want me to call it a bounce back? Nothing personal pick of the day brought to you by, we've got the Milwaukee Bucks 8.5 over the Sixers as they rebound from a 35-point drubbing by the Sacramento Kings. My name is David Sampson, and we'll be back tomorrow. It's just business. This is nothing personal.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around, a watch she can wear every day from Movement. Whether your mom is into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, everything at Movement is up to 50% off site-wide during their Mother's Day sale. A watch is a gift that celebrates all the time you spent with mom, and a Movement watch is even more than that. Movement uses industry-leading materials for their fresh, modern watch designs, from technically complex ceramics to vintage-inspired style, all for an incredible value your wrist and wallet will both love. And with one-size-fits-all convenience and fast, free shipping and returns, it's a stress-free shopping experience. Save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with Movement. Get up to 50% off site-wide during their Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.